Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster, along with Ray Allen, Ray engineering and producing our show today. Together, we welcome you to the Buckmaster Show on this Thursday, September the 8th. We're doing our monthly showdown today. It used to be we did it the first Wednesday of the month, but due to some scheduling, it will now be on usually the first Thursday of the month. It wasn't on the first Thursday of this month because I was out of the country. But anyway, it's on the second Thursday of the month, and it is time for our monthly showdown featuring two gentlemen who I like. They like each other, even though what you're going to hear during the next half hour, these guys will walk out friends. They don't agree on hardly anything, but I think they agree that they like each other. The right-hand corner, Sean McCluskey, he's about 20 pounds lighter now. He's getting down to his fighting weight. Tea Party and Republican Party activist in full body armor to withstand the verbal arrows that will be shot his way by leftist David Morales, creator of the Three Sonorans blog site, which continues to gain in popularity. You've been getting more and more hits, haven't you, David?
Yeah, I'm about to reach 2.8 million soon.
Unbelievable. Well, that's good news for you. And Sean, you're looking good.
Thanks. Appreciate
looking
it.
Looking good, down about 20 pounds. Whatever it is, the Sean McCluskey diet seems to be working.
I call it a program because every time you call
program.
You tell somebody you're on a diet and they look at you, oh, sure you
yeah.
are.
Yeah.
Good luck with that.
Last month, as I recall, we talked about an ID law, identification law that the city of Tucson, some have said might be a good idea, David Morales. Well, Phoenix beat us to the punch on that one.
Phoenix actually did beat us to the punch on it. They passed the voter ID law, which... they voted for an ID card that anyone is eligible for. You just have to show some kind of proof of who you are. It could be a utility statement or a passport or whatnot. It does not give you the right to vote. It doesn't make you a citizen. It's just so that, you know, you can access, you know, go about business throughout your day. Like if a cop pulls you over, how do they know who you are? Well, this would be a valid form of ID.
But you're still an illegal citizen.
Well, it's not primarily geared towards the illegals. It's geared towards the homeless because they want to roust them up. They want to follow and track them. So that's what they're doing.
Oh, it's a tracking system for the
absolutely.
Homeless.
Absolutely. Think about it. You get pulled over multiple times. You get cornered. You get rousted by the police. You're sleeping under a bridge or a causeway. And next thing you know, they go, well, where's your ID? You don't have
it. They don't have it.
Well, it's mandatory now that you have one in Phoenix. So now they're going to take him and they have to go get an ID. The next time they apprehend him, where's your ID? He's going to come up with some story. Oh, I lost it. Well, nope. Now you're going to get a ticket or a fine or something else like that.
So you're saying it's really very little to
do tracking device.
With immigration.
It's an absolute tracking device.
Well, the main advocates have been the Hispanic community, both Republicans and Democrats.
Because you got suckered. It's true. I mean, honestly, you ask any officer up there, and I've talked to many of them, they're all very thankful for this because it's a way to where they can get the homeless out of Phoenix.
Well, I mean, last time we were on the radio, you were vehemently against it.
I still am.
And, you know, the thing is, semantics matter here because, you know, no human being is illegal. And if you just think about it, I'm not illegal just by my existence, right? Now, what was illegal was maybe the crossing that they may have done decades ago. But at that point, you're still a human being who exists in this world.
And, I 100% agree with you. And you know what? If your community and the black community, which is the Hispanic community and the black community, would self-regulate, back like in the 50s and 60s when the Irish and the Italians would self-regulate and the Hispanics would self-regulate back in Chicago, they would self-regulate their community. And if you were a thug or you were a hoodlum, they would run you out of the community. If that happened today, illegals wouldn't be such an issue. But right now you have a few spoiling it for all. And what I'm talking about is the cartels. If you have an illegal individual coming through doing malicious things, they're looked upon badly. So therefore you spoil the whole entire group. Okay.
Well, enough about the bankers that have never gone to prison for destroying our economy.
I wish they would go to jail. Trust me.
But you know, I don't. I think what you're saying is kind of strange. I mean,
I'm going to roll it into the marijuana we talk about.
Yeah.
Later.
So yeah, we're definitely going to talk
immigration.
About that.
Immigrant communities usually have less crime rates, lower crime rates than citizen communities.
Absolutely.
And so you know what
it's
happens?
Self-regulated.
What happens is Donald. I don't know about self-regulation. It's just. we, you know, you're coming to, you're coming here to work. You're coming here to do jobs that Americans don't want to do. You're not really what has Donald Trump thinks coming here to become a murderer, a rapist, a drug cartel, or anything like that.
Okay, but what's sensationalized? It sensationalizes the horrific illegal acts that are taken place by a few that then spoil it all. And if you go to the cartel side of it, you have the cartel coming in, and right now you have our governor stating that we shouldn't legalize marijuana because we have such an opiate problem. Well, right there you're agreeing that, yes, there is a problem. Well, what's causing that problem? And then they go, well, the root cause is the Mexican drug cartel. The key word there is the Mexican drug cartel because they're bringing in heroin. Well, what it's doing is it puts a negative stimulation on illegal Mexicans because they're bringing in heroin, according to the news. The news sensationalizes only the negative.
No. So there's – I mean, this is – history is very, very important here. So if you want to talk about an opium problem, where this all emerged from was back in the 80s and 90s. They allowed Oxycontin,
sure,
and massive like narcotic painkillers to be basically unleashed.
They're
for
legalized
billions of dollars.
Yeah, they were in effect legalized and became very available.
And what happened was Americans got hooked, and it made these companies billions and billions of dollars. In fact, one of the guys lives in Scottsdale, and he has like $4 billion or something.
$1 billion for big pharma.
And, what's it called? Fentanyl, the thing that killed Prince and stuff. They're still making that, and it's still legal and everything. And so what's happened is, and, you know, where does heroin come from? It comes from Afghanistan, right? So, you know, now you have this. So, I mean, you're looking at big pharma. You're looking at Afghanistan. You're looking at, you know, bringing poppy seeds in what the Taliban might be in charge of. And then you have the population getting hooked.
Keep going. You're making my
and
point.
And then you cut off their narcotics, and now they got to go on the street and try to find any heroin that they can. And the thing is, who got them hooked, though? Who originally got them hooked was people who made billions of dollars off of them.
But you're telling me that poppies are coming from Afghanistan through Mexico into the United States.
I didn't
States.
Say through Mexico. I said...
Well, they are.
But that's one of the main...
Because...
They're coming through their hospitals. They're coming through, you know, legal methods.
What took place in Colorado that everybody clamors about? They said the Mexican drug cartel was going to get shut down by legalization of marijuana. Legalization of marijuana took place, and you know what the drug cartel did? They shift their business model, and they went into heroin. So now Colorado has a huge heroin epidemic. We already have, in Southern Arizona, a heroin epidemic because they travel through Southern Arizona to get to Colorado. And that's the problem that Governor Ducey is talking about.
Now, why did the cartels shift to heroin?
Because they couldn't make any money on marijuana
anymore.
Because
there was a demand from Americans who were hooked on heroin because of the big pharma companies.
Go to Portland. The homeless population is
who created the problem? If you get to the root of the problem, it's our addiction to drugs in this country.
It's cheap and easy to get access to it on the streets when the Mexican drug cartels are bringing it in and selling it. And they've got proof
of it. You keep
focusing
on – I know that, but you're ignoring like the big thing. You're ignoring the legal big pharma – you can go to Walgreens.
I'm not ignoring it.
Every street corner
is
basically a drug dealer.
The illegal immigrant that comes in and does a malicious act or brings in the heroin or has a relation to the drug cartels puts a negative stimulation on all the rest of the illegal Mexicans that are here.
So that's bad, but then if you bring it legally through a pharmacy, then it's okay?
Look at it this way, okay? It's like if you look at a typical Irish stigma, you go, okay, so we're Catholic, we're drunks, we like to fight. That's typical, right? We eat a lot of potatoes. That's typical Irish funniness, if you will. So it's because we were stigmatized that way over the years. What's happening to the entire Hispanic population in America is a few of you are ruining it for everybody. And those few are creating an epidemic in America that we can't control. And our governor admits it. We have an opiate problem here in Southern Arizona.
You're blaming it on the Mexicans, and it's
Mexican drug cartel. Please,
and we're not ruining it first. The only reason you say that is because Donald Trump takes, you know, a few incidences from around the country, and then sensationalizes them, and then he's the one ruining it for all of us. We're not the ones ruining it for ourselves. I mean,
no, sir. It's the news. It's the Democratic news that does it. If you take a look at what happened in the San Francisco Pier, one individual. Mm-hmm. Killed a young lady, and now there's a law that states that they're not allowed to do that. They're also looking at sanctuary cities in Congress, and if sanctuary cities takes away funding, that'll be very interesting, because what are we
apply,
here in Tucson?
Let's apply your same city. Let's apply your same logic against you, right? You're saying a few people are ruining it for everyone, right?
Absolutely.
And you're saying that it's our responsibility.
That one bad cop ruins it for all the rest of them.
And that's exactly that cop. But you guys never
the one bad cop, not the thousands of great cops. It's the one bad cop.
It's not one, it's many.
All right.
And it's the other cops that stand up and lie for them.
But what do you focus on? What do you fixate on?
Let's
you fixate
see if we can on take, the negative. Let's take Terry and then we'll go to the break. Terry, your comment, please.
Yeah, this is actually getting ridiculous. Both sides are doing anecdotal things and way off the subject and way, way off, and it's just not making sense. I mean, they're covering 20,000 things and it has nothing to do with the topic, and this, most of it is anecdotal opinions and things and stuff. It's really off topic, and I'm really disappointed. Thank you very much.
All right, we're going to take a break right here. This portion of the Buckmaster Show is presented by Green Things. Green Things is your nursery. Well, they've expanded, my goodness. They're now 13 acres. Do you do any gardening, Sean?
I don't. I grow a couple of vegetables, primarily peppers, but that's about it.
Well, if you did, you would be... how about you, David?
Hopefully we'll be growing marijuana.
Well, they don't grow marijuana over at Green Things, but they grow a lot of everything else. 3384 East River Road, just west of Dodge and River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park, greenthingsaz.com. Check it out. We'll be right back. The Regional Transportation Authority funds new sidewalks, pedestrian crossings, and bike lanes across the region to enhance our regional mobility and safety. The RTA's 20-year plan also includes roadway improvement projects and expanded transit services to provide added convenience and accessibility. The RTA continues to deliver its promise to you to make our region a better place to live, work, and play. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. More at rtamobility.com.
Traveling is more than just the flight. It's the whole experience. In money saved, in time saved. And with almost 60 flights a day taking off from Tucson International Airport nonstop to San Diego, Los Angeles, Las Vegas, Oakland, San Francisco, Salt Lake City, Denver, Portland, Seattle, Dallas, Houston, Minneapolis, Chicago, Atlanta, New York, and easy one-stop connections to hundreds of destinations around the world, you can get there from here. Travel smart. Travel TUS and flytucson.com. It's the way to go.
Business owners and managers, upgrade your workforce through training customized to meet your needs. Pima Community College offers affordable, specialized training for companies large and small. Instruction is delivered how, when, and where you want it, whether online, at your business, or a customized combination. Pima Community College instructors make training relevant with a focus on today's real-world business needs and measurable success. Learn more at 206-6593, 206-6593. As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com, or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Today, more than ever, consumers want to work with a business they trust. Hi, this is Suzanne Miller with your Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, reminding you that thousands of consumers go to tucson.bbb.org every week to inquire about trustworthy businesses. Is your business accredited with BBB? To find out more, call Celeste Angelini at 520-345-5837 or go to tucson.bbb.org and remember to always start with trust.
Thank you.
Welcome back. It is our monthly showdown. Sean McCluskey and David Morella, 790-2040, if you would like to call and hopefully enhance the conversation. All right. We have two initiatives on the ballot. One would raise the minimum wage, and we've kind of alluded to the other, marijuana. Sean, are you going to be voting for yes or no on the marijuana initiative?
I'm conflicted. I look at it, and I see the negative side of it. And I look at it and I see the positive side of it. It's supposed to go for school revenue, and we always know that we can use more school revenue. However, the negative side of it is, what does it open up? What Pandora's box are you letting out? What are you opening up? You can't put the genie back in the bottle once it's open. So is the medical enough is the question. And nobody on the legalize it for like alcohol has been able to answer that one for me.
What do you think, David?
Well, I think I was listening to your conversation when you were covering in the morning show with Barney Brenner, and I think, I mean, I had a totally different view than you guys do. So I look at kind of the history of this whole topic. It's like, let's see how things emerged, right? Because marijuana was actually legal, I think, up until the 70s, right?
And I don't know about 60s, the 70s.
60s, 70s.
Not really in the 60s, but maybe a long time ago, at turn of the century or something.
So Dan Rather did a nice, really long report on the history of it. And if you look at it, it's the whole history was basically, how do we find a way to criminalize things that Mexicans like, right? And so Mexicans, they said, were smoking marijuana. And then, of course, hippies started smoking and everything. And everyone was just kind of afraid of this issue. So, for example, How much do we demonize marijuana? You can commit any crime in this country. You can murder, rape, whatever. Like, but only possession of marijuana gets you kicked off of eligibility for financial aid. Like, it makes no sense. There's this like demonization we have of marijuana. And if you think about it now, think historically, okay? You come into a place, the Southwest, Mexico, wherever it is. You see a plant growing in the ground naturally. You see people there naturally. And what does Western civilization want to do? The people are illegal and the naturally growing plants are illegal, right? Even though God made them, God created marijuana, right? It's not synthesized, it's a natural plant. And guess what? Why does marijuana work? Why do you get high? Because you have eight neurotransmitters in your brain, like opiate, and you have a serotonin and stuff like that. One of them is cannabinoid. Mm-hmm. And the only reason you can get high off of marijuana is because your brain naturally makes, THC in its brain. And so it's a natural fit. It's something that naturally comes together. Now, alcohol causes way more destruction to our society. Like, you know, we can just see it. We can just see the alcoholism, DUIs. We can see crashes. We can see domestic violence. We can see all this stuff. And yet, we'll never go after it again like we did with prohibition. Marijuana does not have that same problem. You know, people never died off of it.
It's a pathway drug, though, isn't it?
That's what everybody says, but is it really? I mean, is alcohol not a pathway drug? Not to play devil's advocate, but
I
want to look at it as, okay, so the next step is they say that you'll have a lot more people on the road that are intoxicated or high driving. Mm-hmm. Well, what's to say today you don't have people on Percocet or one of the opiates that are prescribed by the doctors out there driving? What's to say that people aren't out there driving drunk? I mean, you see it every day at the Circle K.
Let's go to Carl at 790-2040. Carl would like to join in the conversation about marijuana. Hey, Carl.
Yeah, a couple of things. My libertarian streak says that the feds need to be totally out of it and it should be a state control issue.
Mm-hmm.
And the other part of me says, well, we've got tests to be able to tell if somebody is high on alcohol if they're driving. Do we have anything like that that's functional for marijuana? Now, the people who get the opioids that you're talking about, if it's a legal prescription, every prescription I've ever gotten that says do not operate heavy machinery or drive, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
You know, all right. So what are you going to do about it in that particular situation? But you're kind of caught in a bind here because the Ninth Circuit just ruled that while the state says that you can have marijuana, the feds still say that you can't. Mm-hmm. And so if you basically got a marijuana, a medical marijuana card, you can't buy firearms.
So I think the issue is this, that people are going to smoke marijuana. People can grow marijuana. It's a naturally growing thing. And what this is really about is the criminalization of people who smoke marijuana and of targeting of certain populations who smoke marijuana. I mean, they've shown in studies that, you know, usually white people smoke more marijuana than minority communities. But if you look at the prisons, you'll have 80% of the people in jail for a marijuana possession. And it's that's what it's all about. It's not about the marijuana, because it's out there and it's going to be out there. And it grows in the national forests.
Well, they grow it grows County, everywhere, California. Right? They grow magnificent amounts.
But what it is it's a way to criminalize people and throw them in jail to fill the private prisons that Ducey is addicted to, because we have to fill them, right? We sign contracts with the prisons company saying we're guaranteed to fill all your beds. Well, guess what? We need more criminals. So you turn normal people, normal Americans, you take away their liberty. You take away their freedom. That's the thing. It's opposite to everything I hear you guys say all the time.
All right. Ingrid is next. Conflicted. Ingrid, 790-2040. Hello, Ingrid.
Hi. I'd like to proceed my comment with a personal question. And okay. If you don't want to answer it, that's okay. Mm-hmm. Are you American?
Who are you referring to? Mr. Morales?
Yes. Are you American?
Is he an American?
Why do you ask?
Because I hear the way you speak about southwestern United States and certain groups, and you refer to them as Mexican, but they're here in the United States. So I'm asking you, are you American?
I don't get why what this has to do with anything.
Well, because of what you're saying, that the targeting and so forth.
That's what's happening, right? We're in a state
are you American?
I don't think it matters if I am or not.
Are you a citizen?
I don't think that matters either. I'm just talking, using my free speech right now, right?
Well, okay, you don't want to answer it. Mm-hmm. What I wanted to say is that marijuana, whether it grows out of the ground naturally or not, whether it mimics certain things in your brain or not, is a very, very potent drug when it's put into the form that it's used in. And by the way, it's much stronger now than it was when I was a very young person. Not that I have any personal experience with it, but this is what I'm told. I also know that when people around me smoke that stuff, it goes up my nose and affects my body, whether it's for entertainment or for medical purposes. That smoke goes up our noses and into our bodies and interferes with our health.
So we should ban cars too, then.
Okay, Ingrid, thank you very much. Talking about secondhand smoke.
That's a misconception, though. They're not going to be able to just walk down the street and smoke it willy-nilly. It's going to have to be done in a confined, closed space. You have to read the legislation. It's poorly written legislation if you read it. That's by everybody in law enforcement. Mark Napier, running for sheriff, had come out and said the same thing. He said, it's poorly written. It's not written very well, and there's a ton of loopholes in it. So we're going to go to the vote. We're going to go to the voters for it, and we're going to ask them to approve something that's not very well written.
Well, I think Ingrid also called in when you're covering that. And one of the things she said was, to me, medicines are usually in pill form, right? And so that's another thing. That's another Western concept of got to have a pill. You know what's medicine? Medicine is food. Every single thing that you eat is your medicine. It can make you unhealthy. It can make you healthy. And this is a naturally growing plant that your body interacts with marvelously, actually. And no one has ever died off of it.
And by the way, David Morales, as far as your citizenship, as far as I know, you were born and raised in Tucson.
But with Adelita Grijalva, I don't like...
I know. You don't like to reveal too much about your personal life, and we understand that.
Didn't want to give his home address either.
No. Yeah. All right, Roberta is next. Hey, Roberta.
Thank you. I'd just like to remind you gentlemen that yesterday on this show, Dr. Richard Carmona, who is a medical doctor and was Surgeon General of the United States, says that marijuana is dangerous to everyone, those smoking it and those inhaling the secondhand smoke. What is your expertise that you think it should be good?
Well, I think, you know, Dr. Weil, who's also a frequent guest on the show, would argue the opposite. And you know, when marijuana is in the situation it is now, where it's criminalized, where you do have to do it underground, where you do maybe have gangs that sell it, and because you can't just buy it at Circle K, we create this situation just like with Prohibition. Like, we created the mafia that started bootlegging and stuff. This is the, and then now we have heroin, right? So this is the problem. This war on drugs doesn't work. And, you know, and because we don't raise the minimum wage, you have some people that have to resort to, you know, other ways of making income.
Let's do minimum wage next month. What do you say? Because we're
absolutely
out of time. So it sounds like, David, right now you're a vote for the medical, not medical marijuana, but
yeah, I mean, it's not, God made it. But, God doesn't make anything bad.
But Sean McCluskey's still
I'm on the fence. I'm undecided.
It's a lot of people are
that I've decided yet.
I think we're going to do a whole show on this in October
to combat the last caller's statement. Yeah. You know, Dr. Richard Kimono may have said one thing, but not to pick on somebody who's always on the news, but Dr. Sanjay Gupta says something completely different.
Oh, yeah, you're going to find different medical people giving different opinions.
My question is this. I'm a guy who's got bad knees. Mm-hmm. I don't like taking Percocet. I don't like taking Vicodin. So I take Motrin and I take Tylenol. Well, would medical marijuana suit and give me the relief? That's a great question. Does it all fit under medical? Maybe, maybe not. But if you make it free and open for everybody, what is the Pandora's box? That's the question.
We're going to have to go. Thank you very much, gentlemen, David Morales and Sean McCluskey. See you next month, the first Thursday of October. You gentlemen will be with us. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right. Be right back. It's the Buckmaster Show on a Thursday afternoon. This is Bill Buckmaster. I'm a passionate traveler visiting more than 100 countries in all 50 states. When I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport. With 5 airlines flying to 18 destinations and easy one-stop connections, I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient with competitive airfares, and the best part is there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Check out flytucson.com. Travel smart and fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
The Southern Arizona News Examiner, reporting from a different perspective. You'll read stories from around the world ignored by the mainstream media. Stories from the Gatestone Institute, the Washington Free Beacon, the Washington Times News Service, and other great outlets. It is world news from a different perspective. The Southern Arizona News Examiner. Free subscriptions at soaznewsx.com.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year. And if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
If you're searching for that special one-of-a-kind item, may I suggest Adobe House Antiques. It has a vast collection and variety of antiques, lighting, and fine art. In addition to the interior space, a large outdoor location offers an extensive collection of vintage patio furniture, exterior lighting, and ironwork. Come see Penny at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, or on the web at adobehouseantiques.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
Hi, this is Sean McCluskey, co-owner and designated broker for Rincon Ventures. If you're a rental owner by choice or by accident, and you're looking to hire or change property management companies, consider Rincon Ventures. We employ an aggressive web-based advertising strategy to market your rental. We thoroughly screen prospective tenants and conduct routine property inspections. Our online system gives tenants the ability to pay rent and file maintenance requests instantly over the web. Our owners can use the same system to instantly check on their properties. Call Rincon Ventures at 881-2258 or visit us on the web at rvprop.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Coming up Friday on the Buckmaster Show, our Friday Focus interview with Tucson Mayor Jonathan Rothschild. Our Friday Roundtable features Tim Steller of the Star and Mari Herreras of the Tucson Weekly. Matt Russell has Weekend Watch on Buckmaster, noon to 1 on AM 1030, KVOI, Tucson's voice, and always on BuckmasterShow.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on a Thursday afternoon. It's time to focus on Arizona's most important resource. At least that's what I believe, and I think a lot of other people do too, and that's water. The Arizona Water Report is presented by the Central Arizona Project, Your Water, Your Future. And joining us on the Buckmaster Show, Karen Caesar, a member of the governing board of the Central Arizona Water Conservation District. Karen, good to see you.
Good to see you, Bill.
Well, water certainly being in the news almost every day. It's been headline stuff about the Bureau of Reclamation releasing its projection for a possible shortage in 2017. What do we know? What's the latest on this?
Well, we received some very good news from the Bureau of Reclamation. They announced last month that there will be no shortage on the Colorado River in 2017. They make these projections every year in August. Reclamation's projection for the level of Lake Mead on January 1st, 2017, which is the measuring moment, is that we will be above the level of shortage that will be declared. Specifically, it's going to be about 4 feet above the trigger elevation. So we're going to be about 1079 instead of 1075. So good news, no shortage for 2017.
Indeed, that is good news. And of course, we have talked in the past on this program that, that CAP has been participating in these efforts to keep the water in Lake Mead. Do those programs help us kind of dodge the shortage bullet, Karen?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, through these programs, we have been able to demonstrate and prove that Arizona alone has left almost 5 feet of water in the lake. Collectively, with the efforts of Nevada, California, the Bureau of Reclamation, and Mexico, you can up that amount to nearly 10 feet total in Lake Mead. So we can say with certainty that without these programs, Lake Mead would have fallen below that trigger elevation of 1075, and we would have been in shortage for 2017.
What are some of these different programs that kind of fall under the heading of what's being called Project Lake Mead?
Yes, we have, and your listeners will remember, we've talked about several of them in the past. We have a memorandum of agreement that is between the CAP, Metropolitan Water District of Southern California, the Southern Nevada Water Authority, and Reclamation to leave water in Lake Mead. And since that memorandum of agreement was signed, about 345,000 acre-feet have been left in the lake since 2014. That's enough water right there to raise the lake nearly 4 feet. And, is also equal to the water needs of about 1 million homes per year. So that was significant. In addition, we have other collaborations with the Colorado River. Like you said, our newest one is coming out, is going to be called Protect Lake Mead. And I need to say, we did not accomplish these actions alone. CAP has been able to accomplish this through the participation of our municipal, agriculture, and tribal customers, including specifically the Tahana O'odham Nation here in the Tucson area. They have been very instrumental in helping us leave that water in Lake Mead.
So it looks good for 2017, but can you tell us a little bit about what the Bureau said might happen in 2018 and beyond?
Well, and listen, every year they do the projections, not only for the coming year, but the look ahead. Right now, the Bureau is projecting almost a 50% chance of shortage to be declared in 2018. But they're also saying that we're only going to be a few inches below that 1075 elevation. So CAP sees this as an opportunity to continue the conservation programs that helped us stay out of shortage for 2017 and push that limit above the 1075 for 2018.
So these efforts mean what for Arizona, which of course Arizona is one of the users of the Colorado River water. There are a lot of different users, and we're one of them.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We have, you know, all of our, like I said, our partners in all the lower basin states, all the states and agencies that I've just mentioned. We start with the 2007 shortage sharing agreement that is currently in effect. That's what we're working on now. Under that, the CAP absorbs all of the water reductions in Arizona if we face that Tier 1 shortage, or we would lose about 320,000 acre feet of water per year, which amounts to about 20% of our water deliveries every year. By keeping us out of shortage for the next year and every year that we can, hopefully in 2018, we've kept Arizona from losing access to nearly a million acre feet of Colorado River water. And that's huge. That's huge for everybody, our economy, all of our customers.
So the Protect Lake Mead program is successful. Are any other Colorado River programs coming on board?
Well, yeah, we have been very successful so far, but we need to do more. That's our message. Is what we've done has been great, but there's still more to do. We want to, you know, avoid Lake Mead falling to critically low elevations, which would put CAP deliveries at risk. So Arizona, led by the Department of Water Resources, along with the CAP, is developing new programs along with California, Nevada, and even Mexico to take larger steps to protect the Colorado River.
So then the CAP has kicked off the Protect Lake Mead campaign. This is going to be kind of an ongoing thing, Karen?
It's an ongoing thing, and it's a new effort. One of the things, and I talk about this particularly in Tucson, the out of sight, out of mind, it's very important for Arizonans, business people, everybody to understand the critical importance of our Colorado River water to Arizona. So the Protect Lake Mead campaign, which is kicking off this month, is going to include us communicating with customers, stakeholders, through presentations like this on the radio, TV, social.
You have a website?
We have a website, protectlakemead.com. We even have a YouTube channel. We're really pushing
going
into the
all out,
we're going all out.
Thing,
it's,
yeah.
It's very important, but it's also very accessible. It's our YouTube channel is CAPH2O. And there you'll see videos that will be available that explain the Lake Mead Protection Programs. And it's, like I said, you can go any 24/7 and look at those videos.
And, you know, the water is something we take for granted, unfortunately, and we really need to. This is a resource we cannot take for granted. I mean, it's so critical to our lifeblood here.
Yes, and our lifestyle in Arizona.
Yeah, everything.
And our economy. And so Arizona and all of our stakeholders have a history of working collaboratively to do what needs to be done to protect this resource and continue it, bringing it here to Arizona. So our goal is to continue fostering the collaboration amongst all our different entities to keep the Colorado River healthy and make sure that we ensure the long-term reliability of our water supplies.
And not only with this outreach to folks who through the YouTube channel and social media, but you've been talking to a lot of water professionals around the Southwest and to political leaders as well.
Yes, and we've been conducting a number of short interviews with the political leaders and water professionals and just, you know, all different people that are directly involved and have a stake and an interest in getting that message out to everybody else that that the CAP and the Colorado River water is very important to our economy and our way of life here in Arizona.
And people, there is a misunderstanding or perhaps not an awareness of even the board that you are a member of. Tell us a little bit about that particular board.
Well, and
how many members are on it and what they do.
Exactly. And we are the Central Arizona Water Conservation District Board is a 15-member board. We are all elected, popularly elected in the counties we represent. That's Maricopa, Pinal, and Pima. Pima County has 4 elected representatives, myself, Pat Jacobs, Mark Taylor, and Sharon Megdahl. And we work together with the rest of the board to govern and direct the operations of the CAP. We serve a 6-year term, so it's not, you know, don't hear about it very often. And it's also non-compensated. So we all are there because we care about this issue and we care about the future of the state of Arizona.
And folks can get more information by going to the CAP website.
CAP website is a great launching place for all sorts of information. I'd also like to remind your listeners that our board meetings are live streamed through our website. And so you can pop in, you know, you don't have to make the trip to Phoenix to attend a board meeting. You can pop in and watch the board conduct its business monthly through the live stream.
Yeah, these are not secret meetings.
These are open meetings. I encourage everybody to become more informed about water issues.
And we've been talking also about protectlakemead.com. Check that out as well. Karen Caesar, always a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Likewise,
for the update.
You. Oh, thank you so much, Bill.
We'll be right back on the Buckmaster Show.
Five-star Termite and Pest Control reminds you of their patented foaming treatment with an onomatopoeia poem. Termites, oh termites, why must you eat? The homes of Tucson shall not be your treat. Five-star, will your foam help protect? It certainly will, your walls will inject. Foaming your home will get rid of them snappy. Termites go away and our customers happy. Call Five-star, that's Five-star, 886-0045 and fivestartermite.com.
This year, the Regional Transportation Authority celebrates 10 years of delivering projects across our region. More than 755 multimodal projects help you reach your destinations. By delivering both mobility and economic benefits to communities throughout Pima County, the RTA unquestionably makes a difference in our region. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. More at rtamobility.com. Business owners and managers upgrade your workforce through training customized to meet your needs. Pima Community College offers affordable, specialized training for companies large and small. Instruction is delivered how, when, and where you want it, whether online, at your business, or a customized combination. Pima Community College instructors make training relevant with a focus on today's real-world business needs and measurable success. Learn more at 206-6593, 206-6593.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Experience the best of the Canadian Rocky Mountains with the rail journey on Rocky Mountaineer. You'll travel alongside the powerful Kicking Horse River and pass by monumental landmarks from the early days of the National Railway. On this legendary route, you'll see postcard images around each bend, including stays in picturesque Lake Louise, with scenic tours of Jasper National Park, and much more. Contact Bon Voyage Travel to plan your Rocky Mountaineer rail journey today. Bon Voyage Travel, your travel experts.
Vero Mori is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. And now at Vero Amore's lovely new location within the remodeled Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, Vero Amore is proud to announce an expanded menu and bar offerings with 16 microbrews on tap and 14 keg wines, along with two separate cooler rooms to keep the beverages at just the right temperature. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino, and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com. Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. This portion presented by our friends over in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. What a great weekend getaway this would make. It's only about 3 hours drive over to Silver City. So much to do in that area, including the really famous Gila National Forest and Wilderness, the scenic drives, the great birding, hiking trails, lots to do, no shortage of things to do and great places to stay. The full listing of the many things to do and the many great places to stay at southwestnewmexico.org. Check it out. Well, in the summer of 1850, at a Massachusetts picnic, Herman Melville, the author of course, the famous book Moby Dick, met Nathaniel Hawthorne, creator of classics like The House of Seven Gables. The lives of both men were changed forever. Half history, half imagination, Tucson-based novelist Mark Beauregard has put together a critically acclaimed novel titled The Whale, a love story. Mark Beauregard has been a journalist, magazine editor, most recently manager of nonprofits here in town, many arts and community organizations that he was involved with. Mark, good to see you. Thank you very much for being with us.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
How did this whole idea come about? Was there something that triggered what was the genesis of the idea for the book?
For me, it was a complete accident. I was working on a different book entirely about Oliver Wendell Holmes, who was a neighbor of Hawthorne and Melville during the 1850s. And these were really well-known writers who wrote letters and journals constantly. There was a really vibrant literary community. And by reading his letters and journals, I discovered the relationship between Hawthorne and Melville. Now, the thing is, it's not difficult to discover this relationship because Moby Dick is dedicated to Hawthorne, and you can often find Melville's letters to Hawthorne in the back of editions of Moby Dick. But I hadn't been aware of it. I hadn't gotten that relationship in college when I read Moby Dick and Scarlet Letter. So it was just through researching this other book that I became aware of it. And then once I became aware of it, I became really intrigued and I had to learn more and more about it.
Had you done any historical fiction? I know this is your sixth book. This is your first book under the pen name Mark Beauregard, because your real name is Beauregard Mark Zero?
It's a bit florid.
Yes. People in town know you perhaps as Mark Zero, right?
Right. My previous four novels have been published under my actual name, Mark Zero. And this is my first historical novel. And it's sort of a funny story. When Viking, who published this book, first bought it, they said, you know, we have to do something about your name because Mark Zero sounds like he's a punk music reviewer from Rolling Stone. Yeah, nobody's going to believe he wrote about Moby Dick. Yeah. And I said, well, but he did. So after a bunch of negotiation, we landed on this name. And, you know, it's showbiz, so whatever works.
Well, the book's doing real well, isn't it?
I'm very gratified by the critical reception and also by the sales. Yeah, it's doing really well.
Was the original name then for Moby Dick, was it kind of started out as known as The Whale?
Yeah, and the title of my novel is an homage to that. It was known as The Whale when it was first published in England in its first edition, and they only changed it to Moby Dick for the American edition, and it was kind of a mistake, actually. Melville's brother was negotiating the contracts for the first publication in America, and they were banding about different names. And it just, he had heard of a story about a whale named Mocha Dick. Sailors and whalers used to call, you know, like Tom, Dick, and Harry, they used to call whales Dick, and they used to call them by the name where they were first spotted. So there's an island called Mocha off of South America, and there was this whale called Mocha Dick that had sunk a ship, and they were just sort of trying to think of a good name, a catchy name for the American market, and they landed on this kind of variation of Mocha Dick called Moby Dick. And so The Whale really was the first, that was how Melville thought of it in his own imagination.
So how much literary license did you take, Mark Beauregard, in this relationship with Herman Melville and Nathaniel Hawthorne?
The license I took was in portraying scenes. I really tried to be scrupulously accurate to the historical record. So with Melville and Hawthorne and their entire community, all of this, you know, this burgeoning literary community in the Berkshires, I did a tremendous amount of research to try to place them exactly where they were during, you know, in real life. And I also tried to follow their opinions and represent their opinions accurately based on their own writing. So it was only really in fleshing out the scenes and letting my characters, Melville and Hawthorne, interact, that I took literary license. And I hope, because their relationship was so joyful, that the scenes that I've portrayed also portray them as humorous and joyful and witty. And that was what attracted them to one another in the first place.
This artistic community at the time in the 1850s, there was these artists, not only writers, but artists would get together and kind of a collaborative thing, an artist community, would you call it?
Yeah, they were... There was a lot of competition, and there was a lot of mutual support. There was tension. I mean, they were creating American literature on the fly. So while it behooved all of them to support one another, they also were very competitive, and they kind of wanted to outdo one another. So Oliver Wendell Holmes is especially kind of snarky, and like he's a real wit, and he's always writing things that comment on the literary community. But he also was when people would write reviews of his colleagues' works and he didn't like them, he would write in and defend them. So there was a lot of, it was just like any intellectual community. There was a diversity of opinion, but they really knew that they were creating America's literature for the very first time, and they all tried to do it together.
And how long did this relationship between the two of them, how long did it go on?
Melville and Hawthorne lived near each other from August 1850 until November 1851, so about a year and a half. Mm-hmm. And that was the time of their most intense relationship. They wrote many letters to each other, which were very passionate and provocative, and they took many long walks and visited each other at their homes. This is also exactly the amount of time that Melville wrote Moby Dick. So mm-hmm. the overlap to me was telling. And the ways in which Hawthorne influenced Melville's writing of it was also really telling and significant. And then when Moby Dick came out in November of 1851, a couple of days later, Hawthorne moved away and their relationship sort of fell apart.
Can you see some of the influence of Hawthorne in Melville's Moby Dick?
Yes, very much so, in a couple of ways. Okay. One way is that Moby Dick is much more allegorical than most of Melville's other writing, and that's a trademark of Hawthorne. Many of the metaphors that Melville uses in describing ships and whales are sort of Hawthornian. I mean, there's this one great moment where the Pequod, the whaling ship that the narrator Ishmael is on, encounters a whale, and the whale destroys a boat, and there's this maelstrom and a whirlpool, and as the ship goes down, there are all these splinters of the boat getting sucked down into the deeps, and Melville describes it as if they're bits of nutmeg in a punch bowl, and that it has Hawthorne written all over it.
What were some of your literary influences? Did you know you always wanted to be a writer at a very early age, Mark?
My mother tells the story that as soon as I could pick up a pencil and knew what a piece of paper was, that she would lose me and find me off in corners writing stories. I have no idea what I could possibly have been writing about. But yeah, so I always loved making words and writing letters. It wasn't until I read Dostoevsky's The Brothers Karamazov that I realized that this was something that you could do meaningfully. And that was a book that, despite the fact that it was written in the 19th century in Russia and had all of these apparently separate concerns that wouldn't relate to my life at all, completely encompassed everything that I was thinking about. And I was really moved and thought, oh, this is what literature is, actually. You can actually talk about things that matter across time and across cultures.
We're speaking with author Mark Beauregard. The book is The Whale, A Love Story. The book's critically acclaimed, doing very well. And I wonder, how difficult was this book to sell to a big-time publisher like Viking?
You know, that's a complicated answer because...
Give me the short version.
I will give you the very short version. The editor who bought it had recently been put in charge of Penguin Classics, which publishes Moby Dick. She hadn't read it before she was suddenly made in charge of Penguin Classics. She went off to the Virgin Islands for a vacation to read Moby Dick for the first time. When she came back, my manuscript was waiting for her on her desk. She had no idea that it was coming, and she was just primed for it. And so she had just read Moby Dick, and then immediately she bought my book because it was so based on that work.
It's based on, of course, a classic, but nowadays to make a book a hit, you really have to have something a little bit different. There has to be a different hook, doesn't there?
Well, this hook, there does. Mm-hmm. And this particular hook has a lot to do with the times that we're living in. And even though I didn't plan that, mm-hmm. The recent Supreme Court decision ratified the Obergefell decision, which made same-sex marriage legal, made this particular story of real interest, you know, not only to the publisher, but to the general public. I mean, in Moby Dick, we have the first same-sex marriage in all of American literature. And even though I wasn't really thinking about that when I wrote it, that really resonates with the times we're living in.
So where is the book available, Mark? What would you like to tell our listeners if they would like to obtain it? How do they do so?
You can buy it anywhere you can buy other books, Barnes & Noble, Amazon. But I would recommend that you go down to Antigone Books on 4th Avenue. I just did a thing
down
there.
Shop locally, right?
Shop locally. And they have a bunch of signed copies. So I would really encourage you to go to Antigone.
Okay. The name of the book, The Whale, A Love Story by Tuusonen Mark Beauregard. And congratulations, the book doing very well. And you are a native, Tuusonen?
I was dragged here kicking and screaming when I was 9, but have been here pretty much ever since.
That qualifies to be a native, I think. If you've been here more than one full season of the summer, I think you qualify to be
I'm definitely a native.
There you go. Mark, good to see you. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, coming up this afternoon, more of our local talk shows for Tucson at 4 with Mike Shaw, Ray Allen helping out as well there. Tomorrow morning, 3 hours of local talk with Christy Simone, Wake Up Tucson, 6 to 9. Then me, Bill Buckmaster, will be back tomorrow, our Friday Focus interview with the mayor. Mayor Rothschild will be my guest, along with Tim Steller of the Arizona Daily Star. That's tomorrow on Buckmaster at 12:04. Have a great afternoon and evening.